Welcome to today's edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to feature reports, I'll bring you a look at regional and national agricultural news. And the show starts right after this.
We know it's been tough managing inputs and resources lately. That's why we're inviting you to the Inputs Ag Summit on January 10th in Fresno, California. This event is a lifeline for specialty crop growers, PCAs, CCAs, and applicators alike. It's your opportunity to get help in today's challenging landscape. What will you find at the Input Ag Summit? Cost-saving seminars, networking with experts, special panel discussions, and solutions for hard times. Visit myaglife.com/events today to sign up for this new and exciting conference.
The Environmental Protection Agency has announced the approval of three contingency measures specific to the San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District's National Ambient Air Quality Standard for fine particulate matter, specifically PM2.5. The contingency measures approved by the EPA include the California Air Resources Board Smog Check Program, measures adopted by the Air District specific to the reductions in wood-burning fireplaces and non-agricultural open-air burning, and contingency measures adopted by the Air District specific to the 1997 NAAQS standard. The last measure adopted by EPA includes specific control options to reduce emissions associated with boilers, steam generators, and process heaters. The California Cotton Growers and Ginners Association has been hearing from affiliated ag commodity processors who have had to work on updates to their permits specific to the use of boilers and steam generators. Additionally, the association has run into permitting issues when replacement equipment has been proposed in a permit that does not meet the new low NOx standards set by the Air District. These rules are set to be posted through the agency's Federal Register notice system within the next few weeks. California almond growers have faced tough economic conditions in recent years as production costs soared while earnings plummeted, yet the Almond Board of California maintains that the long-term outlook for the tree nut remains positive, even as the industry struggles through some growing pains. At the recent 2023 Almond Conference in Sacramento, industry leaders said changing times and shifts in consumer behavior mean a sector will need to evolve and innovate to remain competitive and drive global demand for the state's $3.5 billion pound crop. The California Farm Bureau has endorsed a 2024 ballot initiative that would give voters a final decision on approving new local and state taxes. The Taxpayer Protection and Government Accountability Act is backed by a coalition that also includes the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association, the California Business Roundtable, the California Business Properties Association, and other supporters. The new measure would require all new taxes passed by the California legislature to be approved by voters and would reaffirm a two-thirds voter approval for all new local special tax increases. A Sacramento teacher who has created a garden and horticulture program to introduce students to agriculture has been honored with the Outstanding Educator Award presented by the California Foundation for Agriculture in the Classroom. Kevin Jordan, a science and horticulture teacher at the Leo A. Palmetter Junior and Senior High School in the Sacramento County community of Arden Arcade, received the award at the 105th California Farm Bureau Annual Meeting in Reno, Nevada recently. Jordan was also named the 2023 Teacher of the Year by the Sacramento County Office of Education. The California Dairy Innovation Center has announced the latest short courses to be offered in 2024, as well as dates for the second Dairy Products Processing and Packaging Innovation Conference. The Dairy Products Processing and Packaging Innovation Conference returns to Shell Beach February 27th through the 29th. The conference will feature presentations on packaging innovation by McKinsey & Company and dairy industry leadership panels. This year's program will focus on sustainability advances at the dairy plant level and throughout the supply chain. The CDIC is proud to collaborate with Cal Poly to organize this event with support from the Pacific Coast Coalition, Dairy Management Incorporated, and the California Dairy Research Foundation. The CDIC will offer 8 workshops and hands-on training programs in 2024. The first short course will be Coffee, Tea, and Creamers, the Science and Art of Milk Ready-to-Drink Beverages. It will focus on beverage formulation and will be held January 16th and 17th at the Chapman University in Orange, California. The new course will feature presentations by product development experts as well as industry representatives from Nestle, Chobani, and more. The course will also include hands-on training, demonstrations, and ample networking opportunities. There are no prerequisites required for this course, which is ideal for marketing personnel as well as for entrepreneurs and established beverage processors. Registration is open at chapman.edu/ coffee tea creamers. The California Department of Food and Agriculture has received $38 million from the USDA for the new Resilient Food Systems Infrastructure Program. The program will provide grants to support the middle of the supply chain, processing aggregation and/or distribution activities for domestic food and farm businesses and other eligible entities. The program will also support food system crops and products meant for human consumption, excluding meat and poultry products, which are funded through other USDA programs. Eligibility for RFSI funding includes agricultural producers and processors, including groups of producers and processors, as well as nonprofit organizations, local government entities, tribal governments, and institutions that operate in the middle of the supply chain. CDFA will fund projects that address the following priorities: projects submitted directly by growers, producers, processors, shippers, and etc., projects that benefit historically underserved or socially disadvantaged farmers, as well as small disadvantaged businesses, women-owned businesses, or veteran-owned businesses, projects that enhance worker safety or facilitate compliance with the Produce Safety Rule of the Food Safety Modernization Act, projects that enhance traceability capacity to comply with the food traceability rule, construction and infrastructure projects that demonstrate feasibility that the projects can reasonably be completed within the grant duration, projects that reduce greenhouse gas emissions and increase water savings, projects that facilitate training opportunities, including trainings related to food safety, process modernization, and use of equipment or enhanced facilities through the RFSI. Examples of eligible activities include expanding processing capacities, purchasing and installation of specialized equipment, enhancing worker safety, developing, customizing, or installing climate-smart equipment that reduces greenhouse gas emissions, increases efficiency in water use, improves air and/or water quality, and/or meets one or more of USA's climate action goals. Developing, customizing, or installing climate-smart equipment that reduces greenhouse gas emissions, increases efficiency in water use, improves air and/or water quality, and/or meets one or more of USA's climate action goals, and modernizing equipment and facilities to ensure food safety. In addition to grant funding, CDFA will use up to $1 million from RFSI to support supply chain coordination through a variety of activities, and up to $3 million for technical assistance to farmers and food businesses. For more information, you can contact the California Department of Food and Agriculture. All applicants must register online with AmpliFund to apply. Proposals must be submitted electronically using the AmpliFund by Friday, February 23rd at 5 p.m. And since we're so close to Christmas, here's a factoid. In 2022, California led the nation in poinsettia production with $33.6 million in sales. U.S. production was valued at $213.7 million. The top three poinsettia states include California, Texas, and North Carolina.
We're thrilled to announce that the North Valley Nut Conference is taking place on January 31st at Silver Dollar Fairgrounds in Chico, California. This event is held in conjunction with University of California Cooperative Extension. It's a golden opportunity for professionals in the tree nut industry. Network with our exhibitors and sponsors who are committed to your success in the orchard. Earn valuable continuing education units and expand your knowledge on the latest industry trends. Listen to our expert speakers sharing valuable insights and practical advice, but attendance is filling up fast, so make sure you visit myaglife.com/events and register today. We hope to see you there.
The California rice industry has begun work on the rice footprint, which is its version of a strategic plan. California Rice Commission President and CEO Tim Johnson said the goal is to determine the minimum number of acres that are required to support not just farmers and the wildlife that call rice fields home, but also all of the small towns and their residents that rely on the industry for their livelihood. He said the industry's far-ranging impact was driven home last year when the drought reduced rice acres by about half, particularly on the west side of the Sacramento Valley. A multidisciplinary team from UC Davis will be writing the first phase of the footprint. Among the group will be an economist, a fisheries expert, a waterfowl expert, a reptile expert, and state extension rice specialist, Bruce Lindquist.
So kind of in modern parlance, right, it's our next big idea. It came out of our strategic plan that we finished up about February of this year. And the idea was, we know that rice is important for our local communities, places like Williams and Richvale and, you know, the whole Sacramento Valley that really are small ag towns, right? And rely on rice and other crops. We know rice is hugely important also for the environment, right? Water birds, ducks, geese, shorebirds, but also for things like salmon, right? We're working to either reintroduce salmon into our rice fields in the wintertime, let them swim in and swim out, or grow food, zooplankton, for them and put that into the rivers. So we know that they've got significant environmental benefit. And really, coming out of the last drought, we asked ourselves a question of, what are the minimum number of acres that we should have in the state of California to be able to provide, to be able to continue to provide that habitat and also support our local communities? So the idea is that that would be the rice footprint, right? What are the minimum number of acres in the state that we need to make sure that those working rice lands can continue to provide those real critical benefits to the people of California? And then be able to get some policy overlays over the top of it, programming, policy recommendations relative to water use and availability, and other incentives for growers to even enhance those lands that they are operating on now further for greater benefit during times of drought, and even, you know, just going through the ups and downs that come all too common with climate change.
In the 30 years that Johnson has been at the helm of the commission, he said he's seen attitudes change within the rice industry, from the crop being just a small piece of the valley to the industry becoming interwoven within the entire region. Johnson said the rice footprint seeks a more holistic look at the industry that can be used to help guide state and federal policy.
Yeah, I think from my perspective, having done this for almost now 30 years, is that we used to focus on what can rice do for, you know, waterfowl and winter flooding, and then let's the rest of us time will just go and focus on farming stuff, farm policy, you know, some crop protection material. Now, this really, I think, is an example of how our folks are starting to think holistically about the role that rice plays in the Sacramento Valley. You know, it's not just us, right, and our rice dryer. It's the whole community. It's the restaurants. It's the Western Work, you know, store that's in Colusa. Obviously, the dryers, all the ag chem folks that you know, we support. But it's also not just one species, right? It's all kinds of things that we know live in rice fields, and but for those fields, wouldn't really have a chance to thrive. And so it's a way to look at rice not just as a piece of it. Oh, we do this or we do this other thing. But what's the wholeness of that? And really looks to try to connect that with policy decisions that are being made in the state of California with or without, right, that overlay of rice. We think they should be made with that overlay, with that understanding and support for those unique benefits that rice provides.
Johnson said there is no doubt that the drought swayed rice industry members involved in developing the strategic plan. They first met in early February, with the drought still fresh in their minds.
I think it had probably everything to do with it, right? We were having a strategic planning meeting in February, just having come off a production year where we grew half a crop. Not only did we just reduce our acres by half, we also had fully half of the valley, right, almost plant no rice, while the other half of the Sacramento Valley planted more or less close to normal. So some areas, Colusa County, Glenn County, western parts of Sutter County, really had no rice. And so what happens to things like migratory waterfowl? What happens to things like giant garter snake that, you know, may not be as flashy a species, but is even in some cases more dependent on a rice field, right? It can't fly over to Butte County and eat rice like a duck would do. It's stuck in Colusa County and it can't get to water, can't get to the refuge. And so it really, I think, caused us to take a look at that question of, you know, we know how bad it was this year. We don't ever want to see that again. How many acres in the state of California do we need every year, climate change, drought or not, to make sure that the things that we all value in the Sacramento Valley can continue to be here?
The rice industry already has funded numerous studies looking at the role rice fields play first with migratory waterfowl and then with shorebirds. More recently, Johnson said, the industry has become involved with researchers who are studying winter-flooded rice fields as possible nutrient-rich nurseries for young salmon. Others are looking at rice fields producing a winter crop of salmon food. Johnson said the rice footprint is expected to complement the previous work and build upon those successes. Eventually, he said, rice farmers may view environmental activities as an integral part of their production plans.
It's really going to build on some discrete pieces of research and initiatives that we've taken on over the years. So when I started those years ago, it was really about migratory waterfowl. We weren't burning rice straw, right? And we were flooding those fields and saw just a huge response on the Pacific Flyway. Then a little bit later, we looked at shorebirds that use rice fields also a little differently, a little earlier in the year, a little bit later in the wintertime as well, but really key on those flooded rice fields. And so it's going to take that research and the value that we know our fields have, the practices that we either have in place or want to develop to enhance those benefits. And really is starting now to take a look at salmon, right? We've talked about that in the past. Rice fields being so critical, we think, to some recovery efforts along with other projects that are in the works for salmon. But what about things like giant garter snake? We know they're there, tricolored blackbirds, things like avocets, black terns. There's any number of also threatened and endangered species that we know about, but we haven't had a chance to focus on. I think in 10 or 20 years, we'll not only have this footprint of the number of minimum acres, but we'll really be able to expand that into a whole suite of new science for other species and new practices that growers can do that might benefit a particular species or a whole suite of species. And so I really see farmers in the future in the Sacramento Valley, our rice farmers, being able to say, here's my plan for my crop. And here's my plan for all the habitat that I'm going to provide. I maybe have a temporary lease or a short-term easement on my property. Maybe I entered into part of my property into a permanent easement. Maybe I'm running three or four programs through NRCS or through private donors for different species. I think it's going to be not just something that happens because you farm rice. I think that the rice footprint and all this habitat is going to be a very purposeful part of every rice farmer's year in a very, very integrated way. And so it'll really build on those efforts and really expand them, I think, to the levels that they really have every opportunity to be, not just growing food, but providing this great habitat in a state that, has always struggled with habitat, given how highly urbanized we are.
What the threshold rice acreage should be is still being developed as part of phase one. Johnson said it may have different levels based on water conditions, but also will have a floor under which acres shouldn't drop because of adverse economic and environmental impacts. To put things in perspective, Sacramento Valley growers planted about 500,000 acres of rice in 2023. In 2022, they planted only about 256,000 acres.
I think the idea is, and we're still implementing it and developing it actually, is that there will be a minimum. Right. So that in some years, there'll be more acres, and that means more great habitat that rice provides. But it should be a number that we should all agree, right? Whether you're working on the water side, you're working on the conservation side, whether you're working on the economic development side, number of acres we shouldn't drop below. And, UC Davis is going to write this report for us. I think it will come in kind of two big phases. The first phase will be a compilation of what we know about species now, how they utilize rice, and what some of the big economic drivers are, where we can focus some of that policy to make sure we don't drop below. And then phase two, which will come some years later, it's really conceived that phase two report then would talk about we need X number of acres of practices in this geographic area for these specific species, so that once we get those additional dollars, that additional policy focus, we can say, look, we need 30,000 acres of giant garter snake habitat that's adjacent to the wetlands in the Sacramento Valley. And so let's target program in those areas.
For years, the California Rice Commission has called rice the environmental crop. The rice footprint is taking that to heart with a big picture approach that can continue to build on what the industry has already started. This is Vicki Boyd reporting for My Ag Life.
We're waking up to a new dawn in agriculture, a better way, where farmers stop working the soil and start working with it. At Huma, our carbon-rich, humate-based products improve soil health and fertility, deliver nutrients more efficiently, and reduce crop input costs. Welcome to Humix Solutions with a human touch. Visit huma.us to learn more.
Congress is about to go home for Christmas, but there will be no farm or spending bills among its Christmas presents this year. The old farm bill got extended for the rest of the new fiscal year in a stopgap spending bill, but House Ag Chair G.T. Thompson argues,
it is not and should not be in lieu of a comprehensive and thoughtful bipartisan five-year reauthorization of the farm bill. However, significant headwinds exist. These range from the stark politics of the 118th Congress to the costs and funding constraints across the 12 titles of the Farm Bill.
It's made worse by the continued House-Senate impasse over spending bills complicating the path for a new Farm Bill. Senate Appropriations Chair Patty Murray.
We are 38 days from the first government funding deadline that the Speaker set. I don't think the American people want to see food safety inspectors or air traffic controllers furloughed. But if we want to make progress on our full year funding bills, that we need Speaker Johnson to get back to the full top line spending deal that House Republicans negotiated themselves.
But Speaker Johnson claims it's Senate Democrats who are violating the top line figure brokered by his predecessor with President Biden.
The Senate has been projecting and writing well above that to the, I don't know, billions of dollars. That's not what the law says. And so I came in as the new speaker and I said, again, as the rule of law team, we're going to follow the law. So that's where the negotiation stands. We're awaiting a volley from the other side, should there be one. But the House has done its job.
Food safety and agricultural worker groups are asking the Environmental Protection Agency to cancel all glyphosate registration in a petition filed yesterday, calling the registration for the main ingredient in Roundup illegal. The petition was filed by the Center for Food Safety, Beyond Pesticides, and four farm worker advocacy groups who last year convinced a federal appeals court to strike down EPA's human health assessment that dismissed glyphosate's cancer risk. EPA registration denotes that pesticide products do not cause unreasonable adverse effects on human health or the environment. The petition follows a November 17th verdict in Jefferson County, Missouri, where a jury awarded $1.6 billion in punitive damages to four plaintiffs who claimed using Roundup caused cancer and other injuries. In this report with USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford and USDA Outlook Board Chairman Mark Jenikowski, they answer what kind of demand there is for this year's huge U.S. rice crop.
U.S. rice growers have just harvested a crop which USDA estimates will be almost 220 million hundredweight.
Up almost 60 million hundredweight from last year.
Which USDA Outlook Board Chairman Mark Jenikowski could be about a 37% bigger crop than last year. Now, normally that kind of an increase would produce a catastrophic price drop, but
demand is strong, consumption has been strong.
And Mark says this has kept prices from collapsing, and in fact,
prices have been increasing recently. We raised our season average price forecast this month by 50 cents per hundredweight. So that currently that's at $17.80 per hundredweight. Pretty strong prices historically.
But understandably not as strong as last year. That $7.80 price would be about 7% below last season. So not bad considering the 37% bigger crop. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Farmers who file claims with USDA under the Pandemic Assistance Revenue Program will receive essentially 9.5 cents on the dollar for lost revenue during the 2020 pandemic. USDA has announced that the PARP checks are going out after the Farm Service Agency received nearly $7 billion in applications from 38,500 producers to split a $223 million pot of money. Barbara O'Brien, president and CEO of Dairy Management Incorporated, spoke about challenges facing agriculture during the Sustainable Agriculture Summit held recently. With challenges like a growing global population that needs more food, significant geopolitical challenges, and many others, she says they need to take a more thoughtful approach to building resilient food systems, and agriculture must be at the forefront. The summit was co-hosted by the Innovation Center for U.S. Dairy and several other national ag organizations to convene the collective food and agriculture value chain to learn, develop, and advance a shared vision for a sustainable and resilient U.S. food system. One highlight of the Sustainable Ag Summit included producers in different U.S. ag sectors sharing how they approach sustainability on their farms. They talked about the successes and challenges in making sustainability gains and the need to safeguard producer livelihood in the context of environmental stewardship.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.